Hello, and welcome to Media Ministry at Holden Village. Today's date is July 2nd, 2004. Today's session number is JUL 2004-04. Today's speaker is Lori Jungling. The lesson for today is Vocation and Ethics, summoned out to do... Let's listen in.
Shelly. Recording person up there. My name is Lori Jungling, for those of you who don't know me yet. And today's session that I've put together, I've entitled Summoned Out to Do? What are we summoned out to do? Tomorrow's is summoned out to be, and they're interrelated, but I wanted to separate them out for this purpose. Technically, we could talk about them together. But what are we summoned out to do? And what are we summoned out not to do? And what are we not summoned out to do? Now, usually we assume that when we receive a summons, a calling, a vocational calling, that there's an activity or activities that God wants us to do and is calling us to do. And often those can be very specific things, like take a hike to Holden, which I just did, or go up to Holden Village for a month and volunteer your time, or take this job, or don't take this job, or retire, or become a pastor, or something like that. And so we're going to talk about some of those types of things. It can also be something like don't steal. Don't commit adultery. Do love your spouse. Do respect your children. Do respect and obey your parents. That sort of thing. So it can be being summoned out to follow the rules, essentially. But today I want to talk a little bit about what does it mean to be called into our particular relationships of life. And Lutheran theology often called these offices or stations, but I call them relationships. And those of you that have been with me several times know that I use this a lot, this terminology, relationships. And we're called into these relationships, and these different types of relationships help to provide the order and the somewhat stable life that we have here together on this planet. At least that is the hope. Now, I'd like to pass this out. I think I have plenty, which is good.
Is it a juicy thing?
No, in this case, it's not a case study that involves... everybody can have one. Question there for a few minutes and ask, you know, we in Luther's theology way back in the 15th century, he divided the world or human social structure into three orders, is what he called it. I'm going to call them spheres. And the three spheres that he divided the human social order into were family. Government or state and church. And he said that people have stations or roles or relationships in each of these. But nowadays, of course, we are much more we're much broader when we think about these different spheres in which we live. Can you think of some of the other spheres that we live in right now? like
job,
work. Yeah, work.
Did he think of work or government as work?
Well, he did if you were a prince. Mm. If you were a particular, member of the ruling class. Oftentimes, where he placed work was in family, because it was a different type of economy, and the people that worked then were often master craftspeople, craftsmen usually, and they worked to become a carpenter or a bricklayer or something like that, and they would end up doing this within their family. So he put it there. We don't have that same type of structure anymore. How about some other ones?
Organizations.
Like what?
School.
Service organizations.
Good, yeah. Good. And somebody said schools, education.
Social.
Hmm?
Social.
Can you give me a little more?
Well,
special activity groups.
Dances, social activities.
Sure.
Square dance club.
Sure, like play.
Play.
Yeah. Play activities. Play group.
Recreation.
Join.
Recreation.
Uh-huh. Good. I'm going to use play groups because I don't want to spell recreation. Anything else?
How about the whole sphere of, like, athletics?
Ooh.
You know, all the sports.
Would it fall here or here?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Depends on if you get paid for it.
Yeah.
Well, you might almost want to say entertainment or leisure activities.
Entertainment.
So much more time for that now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or you could say shallow relationships.
Uh-huh. Entertainment. Athletics could go here.
And the whole artsy area of Hollywood and concerts and plays and
the arts.
The arts.
The arts. I'm going to put art as a separate thing, because you get things like the concerts and you get museums and you get that sort of thing. So that and okay. Yeah.
What about your residential area, like your cul-de-sac or your
neighborhood. Good. What area do you work in, Linda? What area of life?
Health. As in paid?
Well,
I function in a lot of those.
Right. But healthcare. One of the things we've done right now.
Oh, healthcare.
Is we've created this whole sphere right now called healthcare.
Right? Yes. Mm-hmm.
Where before, nobody trusted doctors way back in Luther's day. You might have gone to a midwife, or perhaps, if you were so inclined, perhaps a witch or something. But healthcare. Okay. What else? Education, yeah.
Healthcare is separated out from work.
Well, because it's something that, it's something that we all use. It's a sphere of life.
Okay.
And we'll bring us all together as we go along.
The grocery store.
Grocery, okay. And that could be everything, that's part of like everything that includes food consumption and
retail. Shopping.
One could even say like economics. Now that includes work, but I think our economic sphere is bigger now. So we include grocery store and the mall and McDonald's and... Okay, that's plenty. If you think of any more, raise your hand, let me know, and we'll add it in. Now, each of us, I want to add one more that we didn't add. Creation. Namely, trees, the hills, the rivers, the land, the dirt, the soil, the air that we breathe. Okay, now I bet most of you can find places where you exist in each one of these, right? There used to be a time where people, and maybe it still is the case, where people used the language of, what is my vocation? What will I do for my vocation? And it's been subsumed under this. It's been kind of made into what is your job? What is your vocation? When in fact, we are, since we're multi-relational, we have relationships with all these things, we are actually multi-vocational. We have vocations in all these places, and sometimes maybe more than one. For example, what are some of the relationships that you have in your family?
Parent-child.
Hmm?
Parent-child.
Parent-child relationship. Yes. What else?
Sibling-wife.
Siblings, husband-wife. Good.
Second cousin, twice removed.
extended family.
Extended family. Yeah, aunts and uncles and grandparents and grandchildren and
step.
Exactly. In our day and age, we have to think of all the blended families that have been created. Now,
family that's preceded us as well.
Yeah. Yeah, the family that's come before, the generations that come before, and one could even say the generations that come after. So those are all the interrelationships that we have there. Now I'd like you to think a little bit more about each one of these spheres that you have roles in. Just think about them for just a little second, and then we'll name them. Actually, question number two, is your curious. My favorite one, driver. We're all drivers on the highways and the freeways. And when I moved to California from Minnesota, and I thought, I lived in Minneapolis, St. Paul, when I lived in Minnesota, and I thought there was lots of traffic, and there were too many cars on the road. I moved to the Bay Area, and I began to understand the concept of road rage a whole lot better. I have never seen so many cars, and driving is one of the most relational things we do, and we forget how relational it is because we're sitting there in our car with our tunes playing and our cell phone talking. And we forget that the minute the car in front of us stops too suddenly, or cuts in front of us, or we go through a red light or a stop sign, we suddenly find out how relational driving really is. So driving becomes a part of being a citizen, I think. As well as if you're driving your family, it becomes part of your relation with your family. Okay, let's look at church. What are some of the relationships you have with your church? And it has with you?
Social.
Social relationships?
Yeah.
Okay. Like the body of Christ?
I think both.
Okay. Social.
Service.
Worship?
Worship.
Service? Did you mean like serving others?
Yeah. Okay. Ushers.
Okay.
Serving.
Sure.
Teaching?
Teaching.
Big one.
Yeah. You said, okay.
Learning. Being a worshiper.
Worshiper.
Learning.
Okay. Yeah. A learner.
Faith.
Faith. Learning. Things like council president, being on the church council or board or whatever your tradition has.
I don't think it goes to, I mean, this is another level, but it's our tribal instinct to go with what's like us and what will protect us. I think church has something to do with that too.
So like a safe space?
I like the word tribal because I think it describes.
Okay.
Tribal protection.
Okay.
Prayer between each other and God.
Prayer, yes. Yeah. A prayer.
It's usually an outlet for community service opportunities.
Community
and
service.
What church is involved in.
Some more so than others. Nobody said the one that usually pops up when we use the word vocation.
Pastor.
Well, I call pastor, but I just knew somebody would say that, so I couldn't say it.
And of course, teacher, another one that comes up occasionally is missionary.
And we have parish health nurse and cabinet now.
Yeah, there we have kind of an interconnection of parish nurse. Bishop could fit in there if you are part of a hierarchical church. Anything else that I'm missing?
Music somehow.
Music.
Great.
Church organist or choir director, just singer in the church. Yeah. Okay. Anything else? All right. Now, what are some of your vocations, some of your relationships, your work relationships? In other words, what do you do for a living?
Teacher.
Teacher.
Homemaker.
Okay.
Counselor.
Okay. Counselor.
Engineering.
Okay.
Retired.
Retired. Yeah.
Nurse.
Pastor.
You don't need
an uncle.
It's work to be a parent, but
parent?
I suppose that goes under family, huh?
Oh, I think it's both. I think you can have both.
Gardener.
Gardener.
see, you could put it in service organizations, and that's where I was I was going to say volunteerism, but you could put that under service organizations. And you really wouldn't put it under work because you don't get paid for it.
No,
volunteering is.
Mm-hmm. But who says work has to be paid for? You're still working.
Well, this is true. This is true. I think I retired. Well, you are kind of getting paid for it, aren't you?
I think the relationship's different when you're volunteering.
Yeah, I think so too.
You're usually treated a little bit better because mm-hmm. they know they're at your whim,
mm-hmm.
and your time's just more flexible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is.
I think it's a different relationship.
See, I think so too. That's why I was trying to.
It is. And this often involves more economic benefits.
Yeah.
This may involve more spiritual or emotional benefits. Sometimes this involves emotional, spiritual benefits. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes you just do this to earn the money. To survive. Okay, how about education? Learner?
Teacher, student?
Teacher, student, yes. Teacher, student. What else?
School board.
School board, administration, yes.
Counseling. PTA.
Principal.
PTA. Board.
There's that whole fundraising thing.
Fundraising.
Everything you sign your kid up for, you fundraise for.
Yes. That's true, particularly right now as funds are going down, mm-hmm. as for public education.
Communicating through prayer and through the service of the church.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh. Right, in the church, yeah. Yeah, good. Anything else for education?
Sorry about education.
That's all right.
Mentoring.
It's actually interconnected.
Mentoring.
Hmm?
Mentoring.
Mentoring, yes.
Menteeing.
How about coach is tricky. When you're talking about high schools, you kind of have they're intertwined. But.
Payer of. As when you send your child to college.
Oh. The pocketbook.
There's monetary resources.
Yeah. Okay. Does this, when I put student down, does this mean that once we hit age 18 or 17 when we graduate from high school, or when we hit age 22 when we graduate from college, we're done being student?
No.
I'm a full-time student.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And particularly, you know, even kids can teach. It may not be the professionally, or it may not be, what's the word I'm looking for? I can't think clearly because I'm still in a hole and like, but we learn from our kids, right? We learn from watching our kids, and kids and adults can teach each other.
That's the mentor-mentee thing.
Mentee, yeah, I heard that, but yeah.
Especially on technological things like computers. And
yes, yes, yes. Yeah. You're here. Okay, what are some of the play groups? And
book clubs, book clubs.
Dancing, soccer.
Dancing. Book club, you said?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. Which could be also part of learning, mm-hmm. but it's both and. Yeah. Well,
exercise areas. I mean, like, you know.
Exercise, aerobics.
Yeah. Tai Chi.
Yeah.
Sewing circles and knitting circles.
Yeah, all these big building groups.
Uh huh.
Going out to eat.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Where would we put travel on this? It certainly could go here.
It needs its own category.
Travel needs its own category. Okay, I'll buy that. photography, sculpting.
Books, publishing.
Piano lit, poetry. Yeah. All right, we could go on. How about neighbor, or neighborhood, I guess? Neighborhood associations, perhaps?
Mm-hmm.
Block, you know, neighborhood watch.
Neighborhood watch.
Block parties.
Block parties.
Block parties. Exactly. Healthcare.
Oh, wow.
Particularly nowadays, you get doctor-patient, get nurse-patient, doc, you know, all the different people that you deal with in the medical system when you go, which could be very frightening, because you can visit how many different people?
Pharmacists.
Yeah, and then add in things like drug companies, which helps for alternative healthcare. Insurance companies.
Yeah. Alternative healthcare.
Alternative healthcare, yeah. Exactly.
Then there are all the, like, assisted living in the nursing homes and that kind of thing that are branching out.
Right, exactly. And healthcare is very interconnected with economics, which some would like to change, narrow the connection a little bit. Economics, somebody mentioned grocery store, all the malls and the other things. Essentially, we become consumers, right?
Right.
Somebody mentioned last night at the forum that we had on the Iraq War that after 9/11, about 6 months after, people were asking, what do we do, what do we do, what do we do? And we were told, what were we told to do?
Spend.
To be a consumer, to support the economy.
Come to New York.
Yeah. Spend anywhere, but really spend in New York.
Investment?
Yeah, investment. Yeah, all that investment, Wall Street stuff.
It's really important to some people. They plan their whole day choosing which of special shops that they really like to go to,
mm-hmm.
because they're friends with whoever works there, whoever owns it.
Mm-hmm.
And they go there to visit,
mm-hmm.
not just to buy things and give them their business.
It becomes economics, but it also becomes part of good friendship.
Social, yeah.
Social friendship, yeah. Okay, creation. What is our relation? What are some of the relationships we have with creation?
Hiker.
Yes, I'm still up in the room.
Gardener.
Yeah.
Bird watcher.
Hmm?
Bird watcher.
Yeah.
Farmer.
Photographer. Photographer.
Garbo detail.
Exactly. It is. It's a part of the relationship we have with creation. And same with the people who deal with the water, right? Who
make sure it's pure.
Yeah.
Steward.
Yes. Yes. Anything else? We could go on forever on that one.
Conservationist.
One of the issues that comes up, of course, is things like global warming, pollution. And so in our relationship with creation, we become consumers of creation to the point of destroying.
I put animals there, whether pets or wild animals.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And then travel we added as its own. That wasn't always the case. People traveled, you know, very rarely because they didn't have the means. Now we have the means to travel all over the place. Okay, now, if we think of each one of these spheres and within each of these relationships as vocations that we have, think a little bit about question number 3. How is God preserving, protecting, creating, supporting, nurturing life through these? And think of your own life, or your own vocations, or summonings. What are some of the ways that
supporting life through these summons. Either by summoning somebody else or by summoning you.
Well, my husband is a great gardener and interested in growing plants and all of that area of life.
Uh-huh. And that brings life to your home?
Right. It's a great part of his life. How do you like that?
Some of the plants die.
And you find new ones out there.
Oh, he's at it all the time.
I think these, you know, God works through these things by giving them meaning for us. And without that meaning, most of the relationships would become purely pleasure-oriented.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, and the relational part would be totally subservient.
That's what's happened in some cases.
Yeah.
Particularly like with our work, where we've lost all meaning other than making the dough.
Well, that hasn't happened to me, but...
Yeah, I mean, but, yeah. It generates.
I think of all the ladies who do quilting in so many churches and how their quilting and giving their quilts away is helping to protect life in various places.
Uh-huh.
Where the, you know, mission
right.
fields.
Right. Sending them to Africa or sending them, yeah.
And now there's a new program in so many churches with the knitting and making of prayer shawls.
Mm-hmm.
And giving them to people who are ill or need encouragement in some way, going through a divorce, whatever. So it's a way of using that too.
Well, in education and volunteering, you have all of your. I work with Need to Read, and you help people that are working on GEDs or. That are working on citizenship or working to learn to read. So that's a way that God has given us a chance to
mm-hmm.
to serve.
Right. And to provide.
And to work for people that are less, don't have the education.
Right. And that gives life in so many ways, doesn't it? Just by getting people, helping people get an education.
Well, and it's satisfying to the volunteer as well as
mm-hmm.
the learner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And all the ways of people do counseling to help hold a marriage together
yes.
or children who are in trouble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And after a while, when you reach a point where you've done so much of that, it can start sucking the life out of you. And then you come up to Holy Village and you get rejuvenated. And then you go out and do it again.
I saw my second employment, which was a counselor, as a calling.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a privilege
mm-hmm.
to see people heal.
I don't think there's a thing.
Mm-hmm. That's what many of these are.
There isn't anything
in many
there
of these places.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. You know,
there isn't a single thing up there that can't be God pleasing or God summoning.
Mm-hmm.
It's in not just what you do, but how you do and why you do.
Right.
And who you are in coming to that relationship.
Right.
So it just kind of oozes all around. It's
exactly.
Just only constrained by our lack of creativity, actually.
Exactly. We can think of all these places, all the different family relationships that we're a part of, all these things as vocations, all of them as vocations. Now, we may choose not to. I noticed that, like, for example, under work, nobody put up swim work or Enron CEO who... Or
Martha
Stewart. Or let's say thief. You know, they're making money off this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
In particular,
hitman.
Yes, assassin. These. Why wouldn't we put those under this as a vocation?
Well, it doesn't, it doesn't build a relationship.
It's not pleasant, right.
I kind of think that the each of those vocations is sort of an, it's kind of circular talk, but it sort of gives the opportunity to create a relationship of two souls that are touching.
Mm-hmm.
And God is, he likes relationships. I think he likes that. A thief and a swindler and assassin doesn't build on that. Doesn't build anything. Doesn't
right.
touch anybody.
That breaks relationships. Mm-hmm. Often. You know? Yeah. If these end up destroying them, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The life that God is wanting something else to do. These, when done in ways that are supportive and nurturing, etc., bring life. Now, so many of our family relationships can do both. Same with our work relationships and our church relationships. You know, you get a pastor, for example, that comes to your congregation and swindles money or lies or cheats or steals or something, bouncing off of yesterday's case study, perhaps has an affair with the church organist. That ends up bringing death. So each of them, you're right. It involves how you choose to live in these relationships.
We have come up with a very good program of Sunday morning prayer ministry, where we give parishioners an opportunity after the services on Sunday to be in a place in the church and meet those who would like to pray with someone individually.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had great reaction from that.
Uh-huh.
And so I think that definitely is a new, perhaps. Any of the rest of you have it in your church yet?
No.
Not enough.
Right. Prayer ministry.
Yeah, and the people who participate as prayer ministers are really very capable. We have anyone that isn't able to...
Stephen ministers.
Yes. Not all of them are.
No.
Huh. Yeah, I mean, that's one way that we as Christians can be in relationship with one another and bring life to one another in prayer, with and for and on behalf of. Right. Okay, yeah.
You know, I don't think many people set out to follow death-producing careers. I think that most people are trying to enhance life, but their perspective is often very narrow in that I will do whatever enhances the life of my family, my small social group, my nation, at the expense of others. And we don't see that maybe we've made choices that on one hand look like, wow, I really did a great deal of good for these people, but when I did that, I also, you know, maybe the third world has suffered tremendously because I enhanced life for a very small, you know, segment of humanity. And I don't think a lot, most people I know are trying to do what they think are good career choices, vocational things, but don't often
see
the ethics of it on a larger scale.
In the most difficult case, the person who's just trying to get it just for themselves, to try to keep themselves by.
Yeah, that's good. Thank you for that. In fact, we forgot one, didn't we? We forgot the world. I mean, we included creation and all of nature, but we forgot Africa and Asia and India and South America and all those places that we are in relationship with by the way we spend, by the way we treat the earth, by the way we do our economic system. And we forget about that because we get involved here, and involved here, and involved here. And occasionally when November 5th goes around here, or 7th, or the Tuesday in November, and here maybe. So definitely here in this country. Thank you. Question number 4. How is God's will or purpose for life built into these relationships? And I just want to take a couple of these. Let's take
You mentioned prayer ministry. How is God's will for life built into that? What is God, what happens in that prayer ministry that brings life?
Are you asking, do you want me to comment on that?
Yeah, or anybody else.
What I witness is, and when I participate myself, is a complete absorption, or better stated, complete concentration on God's love and how our lives can provide that for ourselves and for other people. That's what I see. It's amazing. We have people come back to pray with the individual, and it's like they've suddenly been opened, you know, they open up. And maybe we haven't heard from them in any other part of the church, but they feel that they want to feel God's love as does the prayer minister who's sharing with them.
Good, thank you. I mean, in that type of relationship, and many of these others, and particularly in the church, we get our relationship with God, itself is built up, is strengthened, is encouraged, is nurtured. And we experience God's love and God's grace and God's forgiveness and God's hope in our lives through prayer ministry and through preaching and through teaching and through learning and reading scripture and other such things. Okay, how is God's will and purpose for life supporting, how does it happen when we vote? Or does it?
We hold government accountable to certain standards of justice and freedom and fairness, all that kind of thing.
Right. In fact, in many ways it becomes, although it doesn't feel like it as individual, but when we vote in block, in group, we have power to change things. We'd like hope. to create a society or perhaps we don't even have to think of large or country, but we can think of community elections, you know, school board elections, or the mayor of the town that we're living. And that can make a difference of how we live, how our lives are structured, right?
The strange thing is that both sides often believe that they have God's will.
Right. Right. Becomes a little tricky when you start adding political parties to the mix, and when you start adding platforms and issues and that sort of thing. That's right. But this is something in our country that we enjoy that Luther, for example, didn't enjoy. I don't know if we enjoy it. didn't have the power to vote. They were pretty much stuck with the princes they got. They were stuck with the rulers they got. And Luther, in his older age, as he got more conservative and more sick, I think he got ill, he told people, as he witnessed the results of his Reformation, as it was causing violence and pain and suffering, he told people, obey your rulers, obey your prince, because you don't have a choice anyway, so obey, because it'll make for a more stable world. We, however, have a choice. We can vote and we can change things if we want to. How about consumer? How does God's will and purpose for life, how is it built into our relationship with one another, with the world, as consumer?
A phrase that one of my good friends likes to use is that you vote more with your dollars, what you spend money on, than you do when you vote at the election box.
Yeah.
You decide where
Yeah.
Like decide and make big decisions.
Mm-hmm.
When our money has as much power as it does in this world right now, we do vote with how we spend our money. We make choices. And God's will for life can be built into that, or it can be completely ignored.
Even as far as the economics in a family, how you use the money that you earn. Does it go for a home with a four-car garage and a boat and a vacation home and all of that? Or do you scale down and then some of that money is used
mm-hmm.
and shared?
Mm-hmm. 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 Exactly.
I took a time management class once, and they said the way to tell your priorities is to look at two things. Look at your checkbook, the register on your checkbook. Now it'll be Quicken. and look at your Palm Pilot, your date, your calendar. That your money and your time are your two most precious commodities. And they tell you a lot about what your own personal priorities are.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a frightening thing, but it says a lot.
Yeah, it does. It does say a lot. One last one that I want to talk about is our family. God's will for life. For example, one of the most important ones is as parents. God's will for life is giving birth, but it's also raising, nurturing, caring for, disciplining, teaching, protecting our children, and that carries on the human, carries on the human species, I guess, is another way that God's will and purpose for life is built into creation or into our relationships. Now, the question number 5 is actually just for you to think about, on your own or with one another, if you'd like. What I've been trying to do here is show, one, that we are multivocational. That we don't have just one vocation. And two, that these are what we call ordinary. Way back when Luther was doing his stuff, all vocations, the only vocations that were considered legitimate summonings from God, were calls into the ministry as priests or into monasteries or, in the case of women, nunneries, be a nun. Those were the only truly legitimate calls from God that could be allowed. And what Luther did and what we have done since, although we haven't stressed it enough, is said, no. In fact, those particular calls, particularly monks and nuns who would go and hide in these monasteries and not do anything for the world or for the families or for the creation, those weren't vocations. Where vocation happened, where God was summoning us to be and to do, was in all these places. All these places. These are God's the places that God is summoning us to. And what God is summoning us to do is to exist in relationship to each one of these, in each one of these spheres, in each one of these relationships. And it may be that any given time, we don't vote all the time. So we may not worry about this one until November rolls around. But come April 15th, we're sure worrying about tax paying, aren't we? And that becomes our calling, our vocation. I won't ask how many. No, I won't even ask that question. but I say that because I think still in this day and age, particularly our church, has not done a good enough job at teaching us this. That in fact, each one of these places is a calling from God.
Is it the church's job, though, to do that?
I think it would be the church's job to teach us
that this is the case.
Because I've always taken it as incumbent upon myself to put those pieces together, or at least to look back.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not expecting the church to tell me how to do it. Now, if I go to a worship service and establish relationships that make this system not work, then I either have to change the church or change where I go.
Right. And I let me clarify myself. I wouldn't say that it's the church's job to say, you are summoned out to go and do this job, and you are summoned out to go and do this job. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that the church needs to teach us that wherever we are in life, whatever we're doing, whatever relationships we are in, are God's summonings, God's callings. And to remind us of that constantly, because it's easy to forget. It's easy to forget and just get focused on this, for example, or on this. And it's hard, because when it's multi-vocational, it's, you know, these, because you see these, if you're, you know, you have your family at home, you see them more regularly. You do this more regularly. You may, you know, you go to church more regularly. So you forget about the world. But the church's job, I think, is to remind us that, in fact, we've been summoned into all these areas of life in a life-giving way, to do life, to do the things that lead to life and support life and nurture life and protect it. Okay, I want to ask one last question. There's another one we didn't include here. It comes out of the discussion last night. Does God summon somebody out to be a soldier?
I thought of that.
Yes.
Yes. Anybody know?
The early church thought no.
The early church thought no.
First couple centuries. My understanding is that was considered, you could not be a soldier.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way I feel.
That's the way you feel? Okay. How about anybody else?
Well, John the Baptist didn't tell soldiers to give up their job.
That's true.
He just said they ought to carry it out in an ethical manner.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
He called them to repent, but not to quit their jobs.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think Jesus ever said anything about it. Did he?
I don't think so.
About what?
About being a soldier.
Well, he said lots of things about what soldiers are often asked to do.
Right. Yeah.
And he interacted with them.
And he interacted with them. But how about Paul? Did Paul say anything? I don't think. What would a life summoning call look like for a soldier?
Well, there's certainly lots of soldiers over there in Iraq that are building schools and doing all of that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Getting acquainted with the kids and the people. And,
that's not the job of a soldier. Sorry.
I mean,
a soldier's job is to kill people in war. I mean, to be very specific about what a soldier does, or to protect people from war. That's maybe one of the good things, but.
Yeah, I mean.
But I mean, it has to do with killing people. If you take that away, it's not war. It's not a soldier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A soldier might say that,
you
know, protects life and preserves freedom. Preserves freedom. At least for American
mission, right.
Yeah.
Which is it's a double-edged sword.
The Israelis we saw on the dividing wall, and the Palestinians are preserving their freedom, they think. So soldiers are called to preserve freedom. I mean, not that it's always right or wrong, but they're called to preserve freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Or to keep the peace,
mm-hmm.
like between North Korea and South Korea.
Right.
Soldiers there on the border. Keep the peace.
I mean, you have in the last 120 years, you've had the development of the international pacifist soldier, starting with the writings of Tolstoy in practice by Gandhi and fitness for peace. And, you know, it's, their death rate's not very high, which is good, but their success in stopping wars is not very good either. But, I mean, you do have, you know, that new definition of the soldier taking, you know, resist not to a higher level in terms of a structural support for it, not just on an individual basis. Not just turning the cheek, turning the cheeks.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know? And that's a new development in the last century, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Last night in the discussion, we drew a distinction between the mercenary soldiers, quote-unquote, we have now versus the drafted soldiers that we've had heretofore historically in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a big difference, my view, in the Iraq war. I'm wondering last night why there aren't people out in the streets, why people aren't acting and reacting as it did during the Vietnam conflict. And the only conclusion I could draw from last night is the people that are there and serving and their parents are in agreement that that is to be, and it lets the rest of us off the hook. We have no stake in what's going on with our own friends. Maybe a friend, but if you had a child and the draft was in effect, would you be in the streets now?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you talk about the draft, then it becomes not a matter of personal and family and...
Yeah, we call them professional soldiers now, but they're really mercenaries. They're being paid by you to do what our government says soldiers should do. They have no citizen soldiers. And there's a big difference in the Gestapo.
That's interesting. One of the ways that some people have their cake and eat it too is they get into the healthcare end of soldier business. It's a way to both fulfill the military obligation and yet not be in the trenches actually killing people.
Mm-hmm. And there's
and they don't even have to go through some of the training.
There's
actually,
the chaplaincy
you're
part.
You're quite wrong.
The PHS?
You're quite wrong.
The PHS had was not.
Anybody who's on the ground is at risk, whether they be
a
medic.
A recipient.
Whether they be a medic or whether they be a foot soldier.
But if they're back in the States and kept in the States.
There's no guarantee you'll be in the States.
Public health service.
Sorry, I've been
there.
Yeah.
How about I was thinking of the chaplaincy part of the military, too.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm sorry to be different sometimes, but I feel very strongly.
Speak up a little
louder. I feel very strongly. I'm trying to be more calm. It's hard when you maybe feel differently, but I feel very strongly that there's a strong antithesis involved between being a soldier and pursuing life, and that one of the things that I think we forgot in your church is being a disciple.
Disciple?
Becoming Christ to others. Just looking at Christ, his way is not the way. He never used a sword or never led an army. It's not, it goes deeper, I think. It goes to the level of his purpose being a purpose for life. And I'm not saying there's not a, I understand the desire to protect people, but I think that Christ is trying to teach another way of protecting. And so I feel very strongly that is that war and ways of being that lead to becoming a soldier are in direct conflict, that are strongly opposed to my friends. So it's very personal for me. And I understand that if you disagree, I think dialogue is the answer, not confrontation. So I'm willing to, I want to be able to dialogue about it, but I feel very strongly on this too.
So if the woman next door to you, if the woman that lived next door to you was being abused, would you want to have a police officer there or not?
Well,
It's hypothetical. I mean,
not hypothetical. It happens every day.
Yeah, but it's not happening right now. In this room, I think we're trying to discern the, you know, I mean, you've come up with a whole list of callings, and you've chosen to choose whether one, you know, could be wrong. I mean, there's other of those that have turned the wrong way that could be wrong, too. And I don't, the one thing I hear him say is, I don't hear him
standing. What about a judge? There's a lot of jobs that are controversial.
Yeah, I don't hear him standing in judgment of anyone.
No, I like that. That's an interesting question. And I don't believe it, that policing action is the answer to that question.
Maybe not.
I believe that the answer is to heal the situation. I mean, there's a broken situation, and that police action doesn't heal that. I mean, it may feel nice, but in the end, it doesn't lead to life.
At that point, the police action may save a life. There's a lot to do before that.
May.
I spend a lot of time doing
it. It may.
It's
tough.
One, two, three. One, two, three.
Something that just came to me, I think the other one there that can be very questionable often is under economics, consumer. And what struck me is the one we're stuck on is the soldier, the war issue. And if you were at the forum last night, someone pointed out how after 9/11, we were not called to sacrifice, we were called to go out and consume, to buy. Mm-hmm. And I think in both cases, I would find that hard to find that was God's calling in many cases, because our consumption leads to multiple problems in the world of greed and picking from what should be for others and so on. So I think that's another one. And it was just interesting to me how last night there was a connection between the two.
Uh-huh. Exactly. Yes.
I was just thinking, you know, it is a, in the language of the Bible in the New Testament, you know, Jesus was certainly a man of peace and you know, taught us the other way, the pray for your enemies and turn your other cheek and that kind of thing. And yet there are many examples within the scripture and the letters of Paul that talk about our faith kind of in terminology and of using more instruments, you know, the helmet of faith and the shield and the sword. And Jesus is, when he talks about, I come with a sword and I come with, you know, I'm not here to necessarily make everything hunky-dory, but I'm here to kind of chop things in half, and relationships are going to stir things up. And then even in the, you know, the kind of the final book, the Revelations, I mean, if we think that there's not a battle, there's a huge battle going on. And I think Jesus has mentioned very specifically in there, and he's fighting for a bigger battle, you know, than we can probably conceive or imagine. And so, on the one hand, you kind of get that, yes, maybe it would be great if we could kind of dismiss all of that language, but it's there. The language is there.
Exactly.
I just had some thoughts. I mean, Jesus does say those who use the sword will die by the sword. But it's interesting because in the form of we were referring to the Old Testament, but actually David, even when he arranged for Uriah to be killed, and it's interesting because in that situation it was for his own gain. It brought the sword into his own family from that point on. But I think to myself, if someone were trying to kill my child, I would not stand on the side as a Christian and not try to, you know, protect her. And in World War II, there's also, I think, times in life where there is such untempered severity and violence in the world that it is only going to take a force of greater measure to stop it. And I don't, you know, it's so hard, you know, to make a value judgment about war when, you know, each situation is, you know, different. You can say we live in a fallen world, and how do we respond to the fact that we live in a fallen world? You know?
I mean,
I totally agree with that. I mean, there's no, like, violence is here. It's real. But the solution is not.
I agree.
You know, I think we all agree on that. We don't want war, and we don't want we don't want people attacking us personally or the people we love.
Right.
But what do we do?
Right. And to preserve life,
we
think, I don't like attacking the other people, you know. I don't like seeing the death of the other people.
Okay, we can go on with this.
Some thoughts.
Yeah, thank you all for sharing your thoughts, and thank you for coming. We're way over time, so thanks again. We can continue this tomorrow for those that come and if you'd like, but we better go.